How is it that asking questions and not believing things that are technically impossible or logistically unfeasible or historically unreliable, how is it that that has become immoral when it comes to the question of the Holocaust narrative? We're still expected to believe that 6,000 people a day could be killed in a camp where there were three chambers totaling 50 square meters. If you want discussion on this, you're anti-Semite. But I'm baffled now by stories of steam chambers and vacuum chambers and compressed air chambers, chlorine chambers and Zyklon B chambers, floors descending into pools of water which are then electrocuted. I cannot even believe Vasily Grossman's claim that the killing began with axes, hammers and truncheons, because these were quieter than firearms, and this was done to prevent the surrounding population from suspecting the nature of the work. This, if you will take the time to read the purple passage here, is the same savagery described by another Soviet correspondent, Konstantin Simonov, writing about what supposedly happened months later in Majdanek, as the Germans, too impatient to wait for their gas chambers, began mass murder one baton blow at a time. Just try to picture the scene and the logistics and see if you think Simonov is telling the truth. Or is it that the Holocaust narrative encompasses whatever wickedness people are willing to believe?
And we had to remain silent and not tell them what was about to happen to them. And after the last person had gone in, they shut the door from the outside. Then immediately, two SS men ran up and climbed up on chairs and threw the Zyklon B in through the windows, which were up quite high, and immediately we heard the screaming. And this went on for a few minutes, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. Afterwards, they opened the two doors on the other side from the yard, and they yelled at us, "Shrill, shrill, Rachel and the Hengen, quickly, pull out the bodies."
Any person applying reason will say there was no such chamber in Belzec where people were crammed in and then lowered in water up to their necks and electrocuted to death, and then the room raised and electrocuted again to turn the bodies to ash. No honest person is going to be persuaded by a dozen witnesses of Sobibor who say either there was chlorine gassing or some other gassing, and then the floor opened up and the bodies dropped out the bottom. The New York Times speaking of steam chambers in Treblinka, even millions of people killed there.
We're told that the gas fanning began when truckloads of Soviet prisoners of war were murdered by Germans or their Ukrainian allies. Maybe this happened, but how is the whole industry made out of it? You remember all those vehicles that were converted from gasoline to run on producer gas, requiring only wood for its fuel? Is it the peculiar sight of so many of these vehicles, called in German Gaswagen, gas vans, that gave rise to the misunderstanding and the legend of homicidal gas vans? For if the Germans want to keep their genocide secret, are they really going to employ a fleet of lorries tooling from town to countryside, crammed full of corpses, or even gassing them en route, not worried that they might be interrupted and exposed by some breakdown or road accident or rebellion, but happy to experiment with the most bizarre methods of mass murder? Or is it that Jews with wild imaginations and a flair for storytelling once heard that exhaust fumes can kill?
I'm more and more convinced there was no Nazi genocide carried out in the Operation Reinhardt camps, Treblinka, Sobibor and Belzec.
This man claims to be a survivor of the Treblinka extermination camp, and he made the drawings in this film clip. You will see from the drawings that the Nazis had allegedly built a huge killing factory. Treblinka is 60 kilometers northeast of Warsaw, and it is alleged that in 1942, 870,000 Jews from the ghettos in Lublin on Warsaw were brought by train to the camp. And then these people were herded into massive diesel gas chambers. Despite the fact it is almost impossible to kill people with diesel gas, it is alleged the people died within minutes. Afterwards, other prisoners were forced to bury the bodies in huge mass graves. To take so many bodies, these graves must have been many hundreds of square meters in size. As there were never any bodies found after the war, the story says the Nazis forced other prisoners to dig all these people up again and then burn them to ash on huge wooden pyres. In October 1999, a small group of Australian researchers traveled to the area in Poland where the Treblinka camp was supposedly situated, and they were looking for signs or proof of the mass graves. The graves should have been easy to find, as the whole camp is only 300 meters long by 200 meters wide. And even if they were stacked six deep, 870,000 bodies would take up more than the whole camp area. The team took ground penetration radar systems with them, machines that can pick up earth disturbances and objects as small as a knife down to 30 meters underground. The results can be seen immediately as they are projected as pictures onto a computer monitor. The team spent 3 weeks scanning the whole camp area, and the scans were saved onto a laptop computer. As well as scanning, the team took measurements to determine the age of the trees. And they also took earth core samples down to 6 meters, looking for signs of human and wooden ash. They also scanned and took control samples of the grounds outside of the camp area. After 3 weeks' work, the team had found nothing. No graves, no ash, no remains of buildings or fences. So they returned to Australia. The scans that had been stored on the computer hard drives were then transferred to CD-ROMs, and these were sent to experts worldwide for their opinions. The results obtained by the Australian researchers show with 100% certainty that a Nazi extermination camp never existed in the area called Treblinka.
And finally, one very straightforward question to sum it all up. If there's been the murder of over 1.5 million people at Treblinka, Sobibor and Belzec, then where are all the teeth? The 40 plus million teeth. They haven't been burnt, they haven't all been smashed, and they haven't decomposed in 80 years. No teeth, no genocide.
The Allies also directly bombed concentration camp prisoners, and today we are told this is proof of a German-planned Holocaust. This is another segment from the American propaganda film Nazi Concentration Camps, which was shown at the Nuremberg trials.
The slave labor camp at Nordhausen, liberated by the 3rd Armored Division, 1st Army. At least 3,000 political prisoners died here at the brutal hands of SS troops and pardoned German criminals who were the camp guards. Nordhausen had been a depository for slaves found unfit for work in the underground B-bomb plants and in other German camps and factories.
A deceptively captioned image of Nordhausen appears in Steven Spielberg's The Last Days companion book. We see American soldiers walking past corpses strewn on the ground. The caption reads, "The horrific scene of mass annihilation within the Nordhausen concentration camp." Let's look closer at the photograph. We can see the buildings have been bombed. Testimony of former prisoners shows they were lucky to survive Allied bombing attacks. This Jewish former prisoner and doctor describes prisoners laying in the camp hospital, sick of tuberculosis, in the final days of the war.
"And there I had over 4,000 prisoners laying on tuberculosis. Sick. What are you doing with tuberculosis? No. no medications, nothing, hardly food. It was very meager already. The Germans didn't have to eat.
This former prisoner and doctor described conditions in the camp in the final days of the war. Sick prisoners didn't have enough supplies. However, he points out the Germans themselves also didn't have enough, even to eat. Clearly, the Germans could have killed the sick prisoners at any time, yet instead treated them in hospitals.
And all of a sudden, it was April 3rd, at 3 o'clock, alarm, and American Air Force over us, and dropped the bombs just on our camp. But the whole camp was entirely destroyed. And out of this 4,000 people, we were 200 survived. Because they died there, they were in the camps, you know, hanging in the ceiling, dead bodies, and it was awful. It was burning days and days. We were still, if this, the nurses, the doctors, administration people working on the mission, we ran away. And the Americans made a mistake because they didn't know this is a concentration camp. They knew it is a military camp. They emptied the military a month before, and in January we put us in, you see. So they didn't know. So they came back at 9 o'clock in the morning and hit the whole city. The whole city they flattened. We ran away in the wood, in the fields, and when they emptied the planes, they came and strafed us with machine guns at them. They could know who it is. So they are Germans, you know. And we went into the wood, and we remained about a week in the woods. And we ate only the raw potatoes.
The British Royal Air Force bombed the camp full of sick prisoners. They turned around and shot survivors running for their lives. They flattened the nearby town full of innocent German civilians. The British are primarily responsible for this scene of, quote, mass annihilation. But images of Nordhausen, recently bombed and strafed by British planes, are still used today as proof of a deliberate German-planned Holocaust. Here's another clip of Nordhausen. The prisoners of the camp for seriously ill prisoners who were blown up or shot by the British were buried in this mass grave. The soldiers standing at the edge are Americans, but we are led to assume they are Germans, standing at attention after a job well done.
Wiped millions of people off the face of the earth.
Actually, the British brutally wiped these prisoners off the face of the earth. The Germans put them in a camp with doctors and nurses. What's incredible is that you were shown these images as proof of an organized, planned, systematic extermination program going according to plan, when in reality, this was the result of total disorganization and utter chaos of a collapsing Germany, which was still being bombed relentlessly into submission. Rather than do the right thing and accept blame for what could be said is accidental collateral damage based on faulty intelligence, the Allies instead just blamed the Germans. Images of a camp full of sick prisoners, bombed and strafed by British planes at Nordhausen, are used as proof of a systematic, planned German extermination program. However, every single, mostly non-Jewish prisoner in this imagery was killed due to a British bomb or bullet. The editing of the film Nazi Concentration Camps was supervised by Bud Schulberg, born Seymour Schulberg, son of the head of Paramount Studios. Schulberg was Jewish and a member of the Communist Party USA until 1939. All of these dead were murdered with British bombs or bullets, yet no mention is made of that. Schulberg claims they died at the brutal hands of Germans.
At least 3,000 political prisoners died here at the brutal hands of SS troops and pardoned German criminals who were the camp guards.
This is a total lie and inversion of history. The final shot of the Nazi concentration camps film shows footage of a prisoner who had his head blown off. A prisoner account describes exactly how this happened and who was responsible. The April 3rd bombing. The accounts refer, first of all, to the Tuesday, April 3rd bombing. Right from the first blast, I took shelter under the concrete staircase of the Riviere. A bomb hit the block, and the staircase was demolished. I ran to the middle of the camp, to a shelter dug into the ground, where there were already a dozen civilians, women, children, and also an SS man, as green from fear as his uniform, who could only stammer, "Schrecklich, schrecklich," horrible, horrible. And indeed, it was not a pretty sight. Corpses every 5 or 6 yards, headless, or their innards ripped open. Today, images of Nordhausen are widely used as proof of a Jewish Holocaust. Why is this particular image so popular? The bodies of those blown up or shot by the British, then pulled out of craters or the rubble of buildings, and lined up in ordered rows by the Americans, are meant to imply an orderly German method of mass murder. Apparently, they want us to believe the Germans lined all these prisoners up here in neat rows and shot them where they stood. If these dead people were German soldiers, the Brits would pat themselves on the back for a job well done. Instead, the Allies just blamed their bombing and shooting screw-up on the Germans. What a horrific scam pulled right in front of our very eyes. Imagery of tragic deaths, which were the direct cause of the Allies, are cynically exploited to sell a lie. No one denies these are real bodies, but the false analysis of their cause of death, deflecting all blame onto Germans, is the propaganda. Every single shot in this news segment was taken at Nordhausen. All of the footage of murdered prisoners in the sick camp at Nordhausen shows prisoners blown up or shot by the British. This is another example of the propaganda formula, supposed expert deceptive imagery, plus calling those who question it evil haters. There was no plan to turn these prisoners into this condition. This was the result of the catastrophic end to the war, not everything going perfectly according to an evil plan.
I believe there's another minority who go on to the attack when you question it. They're insecure, they're emotionally fragile, they want to signal their obedience to the powerful by attacking you for it. These people have been thoroughly brainwashed. They're literally programmed so that if you question the Holocaust, they're triggered. We're made in the image of God with reason, rationality. We achieve what we're made for when we love the truth. Team Antichrist wants to own your mind so you do not search for the truth, so that you're willing to shut down your reason. What makes me most suspicious of the mainstream narrative, after looking into the documents and the politics and the media manipulation and the scientific impossibilities upon which it rests, it's the visceral reaction of some people to that. They're so disturbed to hear people question it, they literally want to destroy you. It's this that convinces me there's something deeply spiritual behind it all, and it's to do with the attempts of Team Antichrist, not so much to control your mind and your heart, but to shut it down. Please do not let Team Antichrist own your mind. Keep questioning, that's what your reason is for, and be brave, courageous, that's what your will is for, to stand in the truth that you found. And the will is for love, to love even our enemies, who need to be rescued from the hell they're creating on earth, so that souls do not go to the eternal hell. Most people are afraid to even talk about it. Why is that? Is it not that we all know that publicly questioning the Holocaust will bring waves of hate against you? Why is that? Truly, what's wrong with pointing out the errors of reason or fact, of bringing forward new evidence, of clarifying what witnesses were saying? See, the truth will prevail because the truth is Jesus Christ. And the greatest fear is not of all of us to discuss history or the Holocaust. The fear is in those who promote the narrative aggressively because they know it's going to fall apart.